Hi, and welcome to another podcast episode. Today we have Nicholas Trifonas with us. I'm really excited to have you here with me today because I've known you for so long and I've wanted to record you for so long because you're one of the people I look up to on the island, Nicholas. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Costa. I'm really glad to be here. In fact, as you mentioned, I mean, we've known each other for, a few years now.
Minutes.
Minutes. But I've always felt very comfortable around you. And so I thought, what a great opportunity to have a chat, public chat. And in fact, because I feel so comfortable, I didn't really prepare.
No, and that's part of the point.
It's kind
of
go with the flow.
Actually, you probably prepared more than other guests because you actually asked me, what are you going to ask me? But I always say to people, I genuinely don't give you any heads up. I don't have any pre-planned agenda because unless I really don't know you and I have to do a little bit of research, I feel I know enough. But what I found is that once you start talking with people, things come out. And that's where it's interesting. Because if I bring you in to talk about one theme only, then that's all we're going to talk about. But today I'm talking to Nicholas. And not talking to just the president of Accept. I'm not talking to a business owner. I'm not talking to a civil society activist. I'm talking to Nicola. So let's get to know you. And I want other people to get to know you. I'm sure a lot of people already know you. But because this podcast is heard by the entire world, it's very important. That's
soon will be multiple.
So let's begin. First of all, you were born in Cyprus.
I was born in Cyprus. Yes, yep. By a English Canadian mother and a Cypriot, a Greek Cypriot father.
Did you ever live in Canada?
I studied there, and I used to go every summer to visit my grandparents before university. I mean, when I was younger.
Where in Canada were your grandparents?
Ottawa, actually.
Ottawa?
Capital, yeah. But my grandfather was in the military. He was actually, so they moved around during my mother's upbringing. Mm-hmm. And just to cut the long story short, he was military attaché. To Cyprus in the late 60s.
Wow.
And was sent here as military attaché. So my mother came, that's when my mother came, joined her parents and came here. And I think it was here for, they were here for 6 years. She met my father. And the
great souvenir.
Rest is history.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then she chose to live in Cyprus.
She chose to live in Cyprus. Let's say my father asked her to marry him. She said yes. He asked for my grandmother's approval. She said no because my mother was a foreigner and blah, blah, blah in those days. And so she left, went to London, and he went and found her. And he obviously asked my grandmother, he said, this is woman I want to marry, and she accepted. So he went to London. They had a civil union marriage there, and came back to have the
civil union back then.
Leading the way.
Yeah. Where's your dad from in Cyprus?
From Nicosia.
Nicosia. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I'm being in Nicosia, and you would have had exposure to the international community, I guess.
My family comes from, the history comes from mainly imports, merchants. My great grandfather and my grandfather were merchants. And that's where my father was born into.
Okay, interesting. So there's always been an international element. Importing genes?
I guess, yeah. Well, my father studied in Ireland, actually.
No.
My father was actually I'd like to say open-minded person. He had a mixed friends were very mixed as well. Whether they lived in Cyprus, he had Turkish Cypriot friends back in the day, whom he still had. After the war as well, and some Turks actually from back then, who lived in Cyprus back then. Yeah.
Where? What did he study?
He studied economics in Ireland, in Dublin.
I mean, that generation ago, first to go study, second to go study abroad, and then to Ireland, which is not your classic destination for Cypriots. That's quite interesting.
No, luckily he went with another Cypriot friend of his.
Yeah, of course he did. Of course he did. They're always duo pioneers, aren't they? They never go on their own. Okay, and then you went to study in Canada. Is that right?
I went to study in Canada.
Where?
In Ottawa, actually.
Okay.
I mean, well, luckily, my it was nice that my grandparents were there also in the same city.
Did you stay with them?
No. But I did visit them as often as I could, because my grandfather would make, he used to make wine at home.
All right.
So I would always get back to the dormitories with a whole sort of gallon of red Syrah wine.
This is why you're popular at university, I see. Okay, all right. So, what did you study?
I studied architecture.
Interesting. Interesting.
I think looking back and on sort of different things I've gotten myself involved with, whether it's Accept or the food business I'm doing now or before or in the past, activism in the past. Architecture does come sort of as something that sort of encompasses designing or thinking of a better world that we could live in.
Okay.
And I never really liked Nicosia as a young student, aesthetically, except for the old town. So I think that was sort of one thing that ignited the interest to study architecture. I'm more like an artistic person than academic, if you like. So that was something that interested me to go and study.
Yeah, no, I mean, Nicosia doesn't exactly inspire an architectural gene in many people. I mean, there are some projects going up now that may be interesting, but traditionally these square boxes we've got all over town are and ramshackle
many happened in the 80s, which...
Look, a lot of it was post-74 rush buildings, exactly. I understand that, but in general we're not famous for our super aesthetic cityscape. I mean, like you said, the old town, and even the old town, we have demolished a lot of beauty in place of... I look at the Chagallis Tower. That does not belong in the old town.
No.
And neither do the towers just outside the old walls, if you ask me. No. And I'm not going to start on bloody Eleftheria because that's another podcast on its own. And I upset people every time I talk about it.
it's a mixed feelings.
You mentioned before Accept. Tell me what Accept is.
Accept is the sole recognized LGBT organization in the south in the Republic of Cyprus, and it's been around since 2014 and 2013. This year, actually, it's 13. So it's 10 years this year.
It's been 10 years since the first Pride.
Since Accept was
inaugurated,
yeah.
But I think 2014 was also the first Pride. Yeah, so it's been 10 years.
Well. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Cyprus came late to the party.
Doesn't it always?
We'll
be celebrating sort of 10 years of human or LGBT rights, which...
Well, they are human rights.
Yes, they are human rights. And I think this is a difficulty many people have, is understanding that the community isn't really asking for something extra.
No. You don't ask for tax breaks?
No, but we probably should. Should get them, since we don't have the same rights.
That's one thing I always argue. If you're not asking for tax breaks and if you're not asking to jump the queue at the hospital and you don't get to run through red lights, then I don't care.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Okay, so it's been 10 years. And you've been involved with them from the start?
No, I was... I've lived abroad. I studied abroad and then I worked in the States. I worked in Canada. I worked in Athens, in Cyprus. And I left and went to the States again. I came back in 2009.
Okay.
So I I got myself into the organization, I think, a couple of years later.
Yeah.
Because I was in Washington, D.C., I was also part of the human rights campaign, mm-hmm. Which sort of got me to sort of understand the politics of human rights in general.
Yeah.
So which helped me sort of once I got into Accept.
Must have felt like a mountain to climb when you returned to Cyprus, no? Not that the Americans are light years ahead of us in this regard, but...
First things first, I can't even compare living as a gay man in Washington, D.C. versus Nicosia. I mean, there's no point in even comparing. It was a mountain. There was a long road ahead. There is still, but back then, I mean, we didn't even have the civil partnership bill, which had passed. We still don't have many things that we've been sort of that are have been on the table for a long time, and we keep discussing them over and over again, like the legal gender recognition bill, it's heartbreaking for me. Not so much as personally. I mean, on a personal basis. I mean, thankfully, I'm lucky to have had parents that supported me before and after I told them I was gay.
I struggle when I hear people say that I told them, like you have to tell them. Isn't it funny? Like it's just. We act like it's the exemption and it's something special in a negative sense, you know. Well,
it's what I think it's what you feel around you, what society sort of.
That's my point. Exactly. Like I would never say to my parents, "Oh, you know, I like to eat chicken."
Yeah,
you know, like but you do need to announce when you I'm now a vegan. so I can see parallels
it's
there.
It's
much worse.
I guess you know I could tell that especially I think my mother, even though Canadian, she had these sort of expectations every time she saw me sort of getting dressed up to go to a wedding.
Yeah.
You know, she'd say, "Oh, the lucky girl who's going to get you, and you look so handsome, and this and that." So I don't think she did that on purpose or anything. I actually, although they say mothers know, she was genuinely shocked when I told her. My father, not so much.
Okay.
And this is where I also didn't anticipate this. My mother being Canadian, people assumed she was more sort of open-minded to this, whereas my father being Cypriot, they assumed would just freak out and stuff. Well, it was the opposite. My mother was crying for a week. She was in shock. She was in shock because she was afraid of the life that I would have being in Cyprus.
This is what I wanted to ask you. What is it that upsets parents? Because is it a selfish thing to be upset because, oh, you're not going to give me grandchildren or, oh, I'm not going to have a daughter or son-in-law? Or is it a genuine concern for your well-being in this society that you live in? Like, oh, I don't mind this, but I'm scared for you. Is it that?
Well, in terms of children and whatnot, let's hope that will change soon with the civil marriage passing through so soon, hopefully, because families do exist that have children. I mean, LGBT families do exist. I think it's fear. Yeah. Now, in my mind, or the way I understand it, this fear is divided into two sort of categories of parents. One is the Cypriot society, how it affects my life as a Cypriot parent or not, and what are people going to say, how they're going to view me, how they're going to view my children, this fear of the pressure of society and how society is going to sort of label me. The other fear, which is what my mother, at least, not being a Cypriot, was the fear of what life I would be leading in this society, which I just explained.
Do you think that if you were in Canada, her reaction would have been different?
Yes. What about your dad? Because in Canada, it's not an issue.
No.
I mean, I studied in Canada. I've lived in Canada. It's just not an issue.
Is it not an issue? Not as much of an issue, maybe.
When I studied in Canada, it wasn't an issue. Now, now with, you know, things sort of, you know, there are issues that I guess with the younger generations coming and you know, being discussed, and things are changing. But I also don't believe that it's a lot of the things that are affecting, or how shall I say, the whole idea of pronouns, let's say, which for my generation, it's just, we can't understand it, we don't understand it, we see the point of it, and et cetera, et cetera.
The pronouns is what we're talking about, like the he, him, she, her.
Yeah. Which has to do with self-determination, and that's something that is being discussed worldwide, and a lot of people have a problem with that. It's your decision. It's your you decide who you are and who you want to be and what you are and whatnot. That's not necessarily an LGBT. How shall I say, issue. It's a generational issue, and if the youth wants to experiment, because I hear this from my niece and my nephews, you know, that it's, she actually said to me, you know, it's not cool to be straight in school anymore. Knowing her, the last 5 years, she's mentioned being a lesbian. She's mentioned being liking guys. It just changes all the time. However, if she was to experiment kissing a girl, that doesn't make her gay. And I feel that this the whole educational system and of this fear, I should say, this fear of giving the oratotita, the
exposure, visibility,
giving the visibility to children that are in the community, are part of the community, that are LGBT. Mm-hmm. So letting them know that they do exist by saying that, you know, for example, two men can fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with none of that being said in school.
Mm-hmm.
So I always felt like there was something I couldn't understand, I couldn't feel, there was no one to ask or discuss, or I didn't even know what to ask.
Mm.
I just knew something. I wasn't into girls like other guys were.
Yeah.
Was I into guys? There was a guy I thought I admired.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that feeling was. I thought it was admiration. I loved him, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't know in what way. It wasn't sexual. But again, there was nobody to say, you know, it's okay.
Or to help you
what you're feeling, or help me unravel that. Process this. And yet, to this day, we are still at this moment having this discussion, and there's this anti sort of give this visibility to children, so not to, in case they become gay. Kids don't become gay because they find out that two men are allowed to can fall in love, and it's natural to fall in love.
Yeah.
And as I said, if they wanted to experiment, again, that doesn't make them gay. So what is the fear about?
So you said before that your niece said that it's uncool to be straight, right?
Yeah, I mean, she said that a while back.
I wonder, is there parents and society that are scared of this education or awareness or visibility application to the kids, that it drives this perception that it's now not cool to be straight? Do you think that's what parents, I mean, they simplify things so much that that's what it is? Like, they don't see the way you're explaining that by telling the kids that two men can fall in love doesn't make them gay and doesn't make them go for that. It just makes the kid in the class that is gay accept what he's feeling and seek to understand it or explore it or whatever. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, because I do hear this from people. They say, you know, oh, once we start educating them, they're going to think it's okay. And like, what do you mean they're going to think it's okay? I mean, is it not okay, one? And two, how can you turn someone gay? Just like you can't turn them straight.
No.
How do you turn them gay? You know, like, I mean, I always love the meme of the Brazilian carnival dancer in a little bikini shaking half naked on the street going, you know, don't let your kids see this because they'll become strippers.
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly. You know,
I think that in general, people aren't evil, okay, in general. And I think that people are scared of the unknown. And in Cyprus at the moment, the unknown is the LGBT community. We're still at a stage where it is the unknown. And I think that...
And yet it isn't.
No, that's right. I mean, like...
But this is the propaganda and the miscommunication one.
Yeah.
So many people, say, I mean, that are anti or whatnot, say these things, and then they realize, oh, the guy that sells me newspapers is gay. My cousin's daughter is gay. And suddenly when they realize they know people that may be or are or not, it changes their perspective.
Yeah.
So I think it's easy to sort of follow a mindset based on, you know, watching the same TV channel that tells you the same things every day or listening to a specific voice. Whether it's the church, which I don't expect the church to really say much else.
No.
I mean, if you really, so I think meeting people and having that interaction, if you like. The same with the whole idea of parents, LGBT parents, same sex couple parents. Mm-hmm. They exist. We've had events. Like picnics and things like that, where they all, you know, and obviously it's open to everybody.
Yeah.
And we've had straight parents come and mix, and the kids mix it. And it's amazing.
And no one caught gayness from this?
No one caught gayness from it. No. But it's, and I think the main, the core of it is teaching kids respect for each other.
Yes. Okay. This is the key word,
respect. This is what it comes down to.
Because I don't even like using the word tolerance, because tolerance means I don't respect it, I don't like it, but I'll tolerate it. I don't like this word. And we've been using the word tolerance for a long time. I think tolerance is a word you use of your enemy. I will tolerate my enemy. You know, he can sit behind the ceasefire line, leave him there. Respect is a different word. You don't even, in a way, you don't even need to like it.
No. You don't even need to understand it.
No. No one's expecting you to understand it. No one's expecting you to like it. No one's expecting you to, as we just said, tolerate it, but respect it. And at the end of the day, especially, and this is, and it's not just about LGBT rights, it's about any issue in society.
Exactly.
Anything that is not affecting you, and let's be honest, it's not affecting people. It's not. I mean, my Nicholas being gay does not affect anyone around me, except his partner who consensually joins a relationship with him, for example. It affects him, but he chose that.
Yes.
It doesn't affect me or my daughters or the guy selling the newspapers because you bought a newspaper from him and you've changed his realm. You know, like, it doesn't work that.
No.
It doesn't work like that. And it's the same way that somebody might vote leftish and somebody might vote rightish. You know, you can be in the same room and respect each other.
But that's just it. And at least on a personal level, in my life, I've worked with so many people in Cyprus and abroad. But let's just focus on Cyprus. Sure, many have... once they found out, they said, "Oh, I wouldn't have known you were gay." But in the, you know, and I'm like, "Well, okay."
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
But and then we move on.
Yeah.
So it's, and I'm talking people like from carpenters to, you know, builders to, cause as an architect and work, having worked in film and whatnot. There's a whole mix of kind of people, a range of people that I've worked with in my life, and no one's had an issue. So in my mind, it's like, okay, if I was effeminate, which means more obvious, then I'd probably...
More obvious saying, to the stereotype.
To the stereotype. Yeah, the stereotype. Then I would get looks and whatnot, even though it's business and we're talking about work and we're dealing with a project and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it comes down to the fact that it's really not an issue. It's just aesthetics, in a sense. It's I have a problem with someone who looks, who walks like a girl, or who, which again, that has nothing to do with human rights, and you have no right
to define how I act
or how I live or whatnot.
That's interesting you say that, because
but it's privilege.
Okay, that's where I was going with this. It's privilege, because you could be a straight man and be very feminine.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, like, I can't
and
tell you.
And you can be a straight man and be sensitive. Not all straight men are sensitive. You know, I mean.
You know, you can be a straight man and be a feminist. And
be a feminist.
Yeah. And or you can be a straight man and support LGBT rights and aggressively work for it.
Yes.
And that doesn't make you gay.
No.
You know, so, but that's the thing.
I work with straight men who support and fight for LGBT rights. Not on the basis of they believe in equal rights and equality. I mean, and that's
the other thing is, and this is we won't go deep into this topic because that's another podcast. But when it comes to the sensitive issues, which are newer to society, like adoption and things like this, this is where if you have respect for each other, okay, then you can have the mature, calm adult conversation on the table where you lay out the cards, you lay out the laws, you lay out the suggestions, and you can discuss it. But when there's no respect for each other, it just ends up being mudslinging and fear-mongering, scaremongering. Exactly. You know, and that's the problem. Like this is an argument I make with everything. It's like I always play devil's advocate. I always do. It's one of my negative traits. Everyone hates me for it. I always play devil's advocate, because I'm like, I need to understand the other person's argument if I'm going to either finally accept it or if I'm going to demolish it or attempt to demolish it. I can't sit there and just push out my interests, my agenda, if I don't know the other. So I'll often play devil's advocate. Also because at the end of the day, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like maybe there are issues that aren't maybe correct. Maybe some groups, I'm not just talking about the LGBT community, I'm talking about the environmentalists, the feminists, the road safety activists. There are some things where we might be wrong. And if we can't sit maturely on the table, and I know that that person opposite me respects me, is listening to me, sometimes accepts my opinion, and sometimes I accept their opinion, that's when we can move forward. But if it's only about I am right and the other person thinks that I am right and that's just it, you get nowhere.
Well, yeah.
As we end up with intolerance.
Yes.
Yeah.
As a board, in terms of, I mean, just to sort of, I guess, finish up with accept, as a board and as an organization, we're very open to discussing exactly, because we understand where other people may be coming from or not be coming from. I understand that the church has a very specific way of communicating and whatever and whatnot. However, that doesn't mean the church can come out and speak against a minority in Cyprus for their benefit because, okay, it's a business. I mean, I hope we all agree on that. I personally and the organization, the board, I mean, we've had this discussion, we've had this communication with the church itself, and they've come to understand that, okay, you know, we've built in the last year, we've built a relationship where they will call us to ask if they're questioning something, or why is this said, or what does that mean, or why are we doing this, and we're very transparent with them and with everybody, because we understand that the church is part of the Cyprus society, is part of history, it's also imperative that the church understands that it is only hurting a large part of society. I don't really want to talk much about the church. Racist comments and whatnot like
you
that.
You don't need to.
We all sort of know. But my point is that we're very open and we're in communication with the church, and because they've seen in the past that they've been fooled twice by misinformation from Elam, and since then we've started communicating more. But again, what's coming out, you know, lately from the church, again, it's the same sort of propaganda and trying to sort of, you know, saying things like, you know, love between two men is not natural. These things do not support their credibility and cannot, at least by me, expect the respect that they demand.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, it's meant to
if
be.
If you don't respect me as a person, then I accept and I respect that it's part of society and it's there, and it's not something that I'm going to or anybody is wishing to sort of abolish.
Well, look, it also makes me question. I mean, let's tick the boxes now. Okay, I'm a white, middle-aged, middle-class, male, straight Christian. Okay, I tick all the privilege boxes. I struggle with the views of the church because whether I'm religious or not, or whatever level of religious I am, I always think rule number one, do unto others as you want done unto you.
Fair enough, yeah.
It's not my words. It's the church's words.
Yes.
Love your neighbor. Again, it's not my words, it's the church's words.
Yeah.
So I struggle with the hypocrisy because they can not like the LGBT community. No one's asking them to like them. But the actual rule book of the church is loving everybody unconditionally, forgiving everybody, loving everybody, treating everyone equal. I mean, it's the rule book.
Well, I think it's important to separate church from religion.
Okay, and that's one point I would like to highlight, because this is where we go astray, because I know a few LGBT community members that are religious.
There's many.
Yeah, and that's fine. You can be religious. Because I also find it a bit upsetting when I do meet people that are religious, that they're condemned for being religious because, you know, you shouldn't be religious because the church, not the religion, the church is against you. It's like, well, that's fine, but the church is made up of humans. They make human decisions and have human perceptions. The religion, I'm not going to debate now whether religion is real or not, but for the sake of this argument, the religion says certain things.
Yes.
There's no gray area here. It's clear as day. It says it in Hebrew, Greek, English. It says it in all the languages. Love everyone.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean... We're all Christians. All the parties involved in these discussions and this ongoing
in this scenario
are all Christians. And yet Some tend to feel that they can take the religion as their own,
yeah,
and saying that they stand for the values and the da, 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 da of the church and the religion, and yet what, the rest of us are just sinners. Yeah. I don't buy that, and you know, I don't accept that.
And you don't need to accept it, but even if, according to the religion, sorry, according to the human translation of the religion, that you're a sinner, mm-hmm, at the end of the day, I come back to my point that it says love everybody.
Yes.
Even if you're a sinner, who was Mary Magdalene? I mean, it's Christianity 101. I mean, Jesus, the day before, a week, whenever it was, before he's crucified, he's forgiving and showing love to the sinner.
Yeah, but I mean you know, honestly, if sleeping with another man is going to take me to hell, then so be it. If Anastasiadis doesn't go to jail, so be it. Now, who's the sinner? It's up to us to really understand what's important and what, you know, who should be condemned,
yeah,
in this society of wrongdoing, mm-hmm, and not living like a Christian. Okay, I mean, because this privilege that some feel that they can own the religion, mm, and step on us by giving us or allowing us how to live by their own standards, mm-hmm, and yet they don't follow those rooted standards or values of the religion, is to me just hypocrisy. Nothing else.
Look, I think let's change the topic for a moment because we've gone into a very deep, dark and philosophical, which I did promise you we weren't going to go too deep into that, and we did in the end. But I want to come back to you again, Nicolas.
Yeah.
You run some businesses, and I find this quite interesting because you were an architect, you started to be an architect, but you now run some businesses from entertaining with nostalgia parties Mighty Kitchen.
MU Kitchen.
MU Kitchen, sorry, yeah, I always get this wrong. First of all, tell me about the venture you have with your brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
So during just before COVID, mm-hmm, my brother owned Get Fresh,
mm-hmm,
with his partner, and right before COVID, he sold his shares.
You know what all the conspiracy theorists are going to say now, right? He knew about the pandemic. He knew it was coming.
Well. not exactly, but he did sort of develop the new idea through the pandemic,
mm-hmm,
because of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So in the pandemic, my brother has three kids. And
can't relate to him whatsoever.
Yeah, right. but he came out with this idea where we saw that imports, there was a lot of problems with imports because we do have also a family business, which, as I said, I think I said before, imports food.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw this sort of these issues he had with the kids. Each kid wanted, the one wants to pump muscles, the other one's vegan, the other one only eats rice and chicken.
You have a vegan in the family?
Yes.
And is anyone talking about this?
No, I think
did they have to come out?
I think she's at that stage where she likes the idea of being vegan, but
a little
bacon. In any case, so we and of course we were, we're ordering delivery all the time, mm-hmm, or we'd go to the supermarket, and both tasks were just, the one was way too expensive to order delivery every night and every lunchtime, and the other was like the whole thing of going to the supermarket and buying things, then having waste and throwing out and buying more than you, and the whole trip to the supermarket. And blah, 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 and the prices, and it was also expensive and whatnot. So we developed this project, which it's primarily, we like to call it a food solution, and it's, mm-hmm, sort of part of the grocery store. It's a food-only grocery store, but it's more of a food solution. It doesn't replace the supermarket. But at this point, I mean, I go to the supermarket maybe once every couple of months just to buy like cleaning equipment, stuff like that. It has, we work with specific farmers in Cyprus who are either certified organic or organic, and they're young farmers from different areas in Cyprus. So we get produce growing at different times of the year, depending on the, you know, like Paphos is different weather than Protaras, Paralimni over there. Okay, so we work with these farmers. So, and basically with whom you can also find at Ochi, by the way, at Ochi Market. Yeah. But we've come to say, okay, if you don't have the time or the luxury to go to Ochi, because it's really an experience and you'll get the best prices and the best produce in any case, more than the supermarkets, we can bring that produce to you. Because we work with them, and we buy our products, the products from them, at prices we agreed with them, not supermarket prices. Now that's the food and fruit and vegetable section. But the main business is basically the food solution I was talking about. Is we have an industrial kitchen and we cook fresh ingredients daily. Mm-hmm. We package them, and vacuum pack them, chill them, and send them to your home. So you may order like, and it's two portions per bag. So you might order like rice, chicken, that's salt and pepper chicken, and sweet potato and pumpkin chunks. So you've got your veggie, your protein, and your carb. And you just literally throw it in a pan, heat it up, and that's it. You're not cooking anything. So this comes as a sort of a solution, like during the week when you don't really have time, you've got kids, you don't want to spend too much time cooking from scratch and whatnot. If you have on the weekend the luxury to cook a souvla, by all means, go for it. So that's kind of where we are.
Has the concept picked up?
It's slow. Yeah. We developed a second concept, which was like Get Fresh, but sort of we've taken it a step up. So we've got, with all these ingredients that I described, the farmers, vegetables, and vegetables, the ingredients that we chill, that we can send to your home, we've created recipes and wraps and soups and things like that, salads, meals that we can deliver to you hot to eat, ready to eat. And then we have a third concept, which is sort of a healthy fast food called Bowls. And it's different kinds of like falafel sized bowls. So there's beetroot falafel, sweet potato falafel, classic falafel, protein falafel, etc. So that's
is it just delivery, or do you have a place where people can come and visit you?
Thanks for asking. Yes, we do have a place. It's not, we haven't advertised it much, but some people do choose to sort of come by and eat there or take away. We've got a ping pong table, and we've got my nostalgia video game machine there too, and we've got lots of architecture and art books and whatnot. So you can come and it's a no frou frou kind of place. No frills kind of place. We've called it a sort of a Cypriot Canadian abajico.
Okay. Well, if it's a Cypriot Canadian abajico, do you have poutine?
Yes, of course we have poutine. It's on the new menu. Actually, I think I told you about it once, but we couldn't find cheese curds. We found a cheese actually that we can use that works just like cheese curds and looks like cheese curds.
Okay.
We'll
locally produced, or
I believe so.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff have maple syrup, obviously, because of our Canadian background.
Where is the shop?
In Ngomi Industrial Area, actually. So it's a road which obviously it's not a passerby road, so you kind of have to know to get there. But yeah, if you drive around the Ngomi Industrial Area, you're bound to
come across you.
Yeah, it's a big yellow wall with a white door that looks like a back door, so we're changing the door to make it a bit more inviting.
It's near the University of Nicosia's architectural school, if I'm not mistaken.
It's in the same industrial area. Yeah. It's actually behind the dorms of the where what's it called, Mikkel Cafe and
Mikkel and the Por Favor. Yeah,
it's behind there.
Okay. Now you mentioned nostalgia. Tell me a bit about that.
So
nostalgia, I'm ashamed to say that I've never been to one.
You think I don't know? You think I wouldn't have noticed if you come? But let me know any time and I'll book your table. It's on me. Nostalgia was a concept that started. I used to run the old Powerhouse restaurant at some point. When I arrived in Cyprus.
Okay.
Yeah, 2009, 2010, somewhere there. They wanted me to turn it around, sort of thing. It was a little old school and blah, blah, blah. So I started working there, and I noticed I had a few conversations with friends my age. I was in my 40s then, and they said, you know, why don't you do an event, like a party or something, because for us, because there's all the things to go dance to is for young people, and there's nothing for us grown-ups to, like we used to when we were younger, like in the 80s. And I said, Jesus, you know, you're right. I miss dancing too and whatnot. So we, with my 10-year now business partner and friend, Claudio Sagbini, whom I met there as I think he came to play as a DJ at some point. And we said we'd do this together, and it's been successful ever since. And I think the main reason is, again, it's I feel at least I know that we're on the same level with Claudio, but it also runs along my same sort of ideas of how I wish society would be in Cyprus. So, okay, I've had people call me for the party and ask me what do we need to wear to get in.
Oh wow!
And I'm like, what do you mean? What do we need to wear? High heels, suit,
this dress, and that. Okay,
how do we need to dress?
So they don't, as we say in Cypriot, don't eat the door.
Yes. And I said, you can come in flip-flops and shorts if you like. Really?
Oh,
yes,
wow.
Yes, of course. So it gave me the understanding that people just, you know,
there wasn't, have fun
there wasn't, all, yeah, yeah, people didn't, you know, people just want to, you know, come comfortable as you are, mingle, flirt, come, you know. And I've never, to this day, I have never had anyone like any fight or getting drunk for the wrong reasons or whatever at my parties. And it's a very mixed crowd.
Is it always in the same place?
No. We sort of selectively choose our venues. In fact, now it's also my 10-year anniversary for Nostalgia, and we're organizing our we had started this party at Forest Park Hotel in Platres.
Yes, I remember that.
We had done a weekend maybe 6-7 years ago up there, and then we were doing Sunday, just day party up there. So we decided to do a long weekend. So it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
When?
End of last weekend of June. You're welcome to come up with the kids. If you want or not.
no one actually saw what I just did, but I shook my head violently. So wait, I'm getting my calendar out. You said the last weekend of June?
Last weekend of June, yeah. Okay. So we'll be having there'll be DJs, performances, sort of hikes, massages, yoga, all these kind of activities around. If you like, there'll be... the main party will be Saturday night, and it'll be like a 40s, 50s, 60s rock and roll, things like that. And we'll have disco during the day. So it'll cover all the genres, all through the weekend. And again, I mean, based on the last ones we've had, it's just been a very positive, all different age kind of crowd.
So. What? How many people normally come to these? Is that like talking tens, hundreds?
No, we get, I mean, like the one we do, our next one is the carnival one we're mm-hmm. doing, and it's at Andonagis Music Hall. Mm-hmm. And there we get about maybe 300 to 400 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
It fits that many, of course.
Yeah.
It fits more.
Well, you could order the ATB and have a thousand, well, actually, a couple thousand.
I told Claudio, I said, can't we bring Duran Duran for our 10-year anniversary? And he goes, we'll need Magario Stadium for that. And 50,000. I said, okay, maybe it's easier to get the stadiums with 50,000. Well,
when do you get Darren, the imitation group, you know?
Yes, that would work too. Would work too.
Okay, well, I mean, how many of these parties have you done?
Around over 60.
Wow.
Over 60 parties.
Yeah, shame on me.
It's okay. But again, it has to do with, you know, sort of, it's for a lot of people, especially my age, it's going down memory lane. Each song it's a heartfelt thing. So there's a lot of this emotional thing going on at the parties for a lot of people. I'm glad to see the younger generation knows the words to a lot of the 80s tunes.
Yes.
So they're learning them.
Do you know what's really sad? Or what scares me? When the music of the 80s and 90s and 2000s is being referred to as retro. I'm like, retro? Yes. Isn't that the 60s?
Not anymore.
No.
Not anymore.
No, I must admit, I did go to a birthday party. I was invited to a birthday party just this last couple of weeks. And it was a 90s themed party. And whilst I didn't like the venue and I didn't like the environment and it was very smoky, it was terrible. But the music and the DJ were fantastic. And it was exactly what you said. The songs all spoke to me because they all reminded me of my younger years when I would go out clubbing in Melbourne. And what made my wife laugh was that all the English 90s music, of course I heard them in Melbourne, you know, growing up in an English-speaking community. Yeah. But I knew all the words to the Greek 90s songs because in Melbourne, again, being such a Greek city, we'd heard it all. So, I was getting nostalgic by listening to the Greek 90s music. It was making me think of Melbourne and not Cyprus in the 90s, you know. And so, I was getting into it just as much as everyone else, you know. So, I thought, okay, but music does have the – music and smell are the two things that can really – make you nostalgic and other than, you know, spraying the room with certain perfumes, music is going to do that, make people nostalgic. Yeah. Although I haven't been to your parties, I have heard amazing things. I've seen amazing pictures. Everyone that I know that goes to them begs me to go. And it just happens to be that every time I haven't been able to go. Look, having three kids, your brother will understand.
I totally understand because my brother has three kids. He's been to a few, but, you know, like for half an hour, then he's gone. He's too exhausted. So that's fine.
What time do they start? You said they're during the day as well?
Well, no. The one at the forest park, the weekend thing, will be also during the day. No, usually they start around 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. The one in the carnival at Andonaki's, what date is that?
That's on the 9th of March.
9th of March, okay. Yeah, and Saturday. That's at Andonaki's. Okay, all right. I'll have to.
But I think everything I sort of want to be involved with, or project wise, or the history of things I've done, always I feel have to do with giving a safe space, a positive space, a positive interaction between people. And who's, you know, let's not be kidding. Who wants to be mad and pissed off and miserable?
Yet it seems to be in fashion with a lot of people.
It seems to be in fashion.
I'm sure these people don't really want to feel that way.
But I think a lot of people don't want others to be happy either.
Do you think it's they don't want other people to be happy, or do you think it's just that?
Because they're miserable.
Yeah, and they. Sorry, there's a level of jealousy, maybe, that you're happy, why can't I be happy, so you shouldn't be happy?
I think people who have been pushed into, because of society and what the family says and blah, blah, people who have been, I mean, I've seen, and we all know a lot of couples that have been married and are now divorced. You know that there's more divorces than marriages in Cyprus.
Yeah.
There's more single moms now than there are marriages.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's skyrocketing. There's more divorce. If I was doing parties for divorces, I'd be a millionaire by now.
Well, see, maybe that's where we need to look at the root. Because, I mean, like, at the end of the day, people should get divorced if they're unhappy and it's not working, if they've tried everything. on the other hand, if we have so many divorces, then maybe too many people are getting married when they shouldn't be.
Yeah, so where's the responsibility of the church here? But anyway, I don't want to get back.
No, let's not go back to the church. We've done that.
You know, but
my next podcast will be with the Archbishop, and I'll get him.
But yeah, I mean, it's just it's just sad. It's sad because I think a lot of people were sort of quote unquote like you know what to call it just kind of pushed into getting married. When they didn't necessarily want to. Now a lot of them are divorced or in their miserable marriages.
We're still a society that can't comprehend somebody having a child if they're not married. Like you hear, oh, such and such is pregnant. Oh, when did she get married? You're like, well, she didn't. Yeah. Oh, what do you mean? You
know, it's beginning. Yeah. It's beginning. I mean, there are now, and we've just passed the bill for single women.
Tell me more about that, just quickly.
There's a bill that's just been passed for surrogacy, but only for single women. So no single men.
But wait, a single woman wants to have a kid, and somebody does a surrogacy for her, or she?
No, does a surrogacy for her. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and that's because the single woman can't get pregnant.
Yeah, for whatever reason. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Or a married straight woman, but not. And this is what I find is sort of it's the whole thing is anti-constitutional. But if as a lesbian, you can apply for adoption through with surrogacy. So as a single mom, you can also do that as a married woman to a man.
Yeah.
But if you are a single woman and as a lesbian, I said you can also. But if you're married to a woman, then you can't. It's only with civil partnership, which. That's the only thing that's missing from civil partnership the difference between civil partnership and civil union is the adoption. So right now we have couples who are both women who are bringing up a child whose biological mother is the one mother, but the other mother has absolutely no
rights
over the child whatsoever. So if something happens to the biological mother, her parents or her family could come to take the child away. And this is what we're saying, is that whether we like it or we understand it or we don't like it or blah, 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 it exists. It exists, and we have... I heard the other day someone saying that, a theologian, I think, is saying that it's not important right now. There's other more important things. Well, I'm sure there's a lot more important things for straight people to deal with than marriage equality. But it's creating so many problems for children at schools, bullying, and I'll explain that, and existing children who belong to LGBT families. And I feel that it's not... people aren't being educated to understand exactly what this all means, what exactly is happening, what the facts are. The fact that someone like me would be pushed into getting married, acting like I'm straight, getting married, marrying a woman, having a child. Why? Because I can have sex with a woman.
Okay.
Having a child, then coming out to my wife and saying, look, I'm actually gay, da, 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 so we're separating. I'm with this other man now, so we divorce, blah, blah. This is what's been happening, and this is what we seem to want to prolong with these kind of... It's like we want to force people to get married, to have children, even if they're gay, yet we won't allow those same men, and I'll speak just for men, those same men who may lie and marry a woman to have a child, they can't have a child, a surrogate with surrogate woman, or adopt, or to adopt. But as a couple,
I mentioned earlier that I always play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
Let's not go down the adoption, that's one thing, but with surrogacy, mm-hmm. I do hear the voices saying that surrogacy programs or systems mm-hmm. open up the door to trafficking and abuse. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is that because we need to acknowledge that indeed sure. that could happen. So when you have the mature conversation, then you can tackle those issues. So
for sure.
Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing mm-hmm. with what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
What I disagree with is if there is if by law,
yeah.
You can have a child through surrogacy, then that should apply to everyone.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Otherwise, ban the law, and there's no surrogacy for anyone.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. This is where equality comes. It's one thing to ban or allow surrogacy. But you can't allow it for one and not the other.
Yeah, because of your own personal
beliefs. It's like I'm going to allow, yeah.
You know, that
let's just say we're living in a vegan world and somebody says, okay, you know what? All the people that are white and over 2 meters tall can have chicken.
Yeah.
You know, that's not allowed. That's discrimination because then everyone else might want to have chicken.
Yeah, because what's your criteria?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. What's your criteria? How much somebody loves a child? Define that.
Yeah. Is a good parent? What's a good parent? What's How do you a define good parent? A good parent?
Yeah.
Maybe everyone should go through a psychiatrist or psychologist before they're allowed to have children.
I sometimes have this argument. That,
you know, I mean,
yeah.
No, I mean, it sounds like dictatorship, but I mean, there's a lot of people out there that shouldn't have had kids.
You know,
that's a lot.
I was watching a show the other day where they said that it is a human right to have a family. But not a human right to have a biological child. And I thought, I just couldn't get my head around that. And it was something along the lines of, it was a medical show, and they were saying that this woman was going to have an operation, and she was anesthetized, so she was asleep. And they went to the husband and said, look, we've discovered that in the process of operating on her, we're going to have to remove her uterus. And the husband said, no, she wants to have a baby, keep it. And they've gone, if she keeps it, she runs the risk of dying in the next couple months. And he was insisting, no, keep it. And the doctors decided, they overruled the husband, and the doctor said, no, she has more of a right to life than the right to have a baby.
Mm.
And they chose to remove the uterus, and then she survived, okay? But she's not able to have her own biological child, so now she'll have to adopt or surrogate or whatever.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking. I mean, I don't know if it was just in the movie, but I mean, it seemed to be reflecting the realities in the States, in the United States. And I thought to myself, how interesting. Like, how can someone not have the right to a biological child, but have the right to have a family? So basically saying it's okay to adopt. It's okay for a gay couple to adopt, but it's not okay for a heterosexual woman to have the right to have a baby. And I thought, and I don't know if it was just Hollywood. But it got me thinking. I mean, I haven't done the research, but it really got me thinking. I thought, wow, we're now debating the right to having a child in general. Like, I mean.
Well, interesting. I haven't done the research either, but it's interesting. I think to me, it sort of touches on the Peter Ostopid, the child commissioner said about that your children do not belong to you.
Mm.
And the majority of, a lot of people misunderstood that. They're like, no, I had the child and it's mine and I can decide what I want for the child. Well, Not if it's not in the child's best interest. So, and I've seen this sort of like the commissioner will say something and they'll either, a lot of the politicians, they if they like it, then they agree with her.
Yeah.
If they don't like it, then they're saying she's
twisted. The fact of the matter is that, you don't own humans.
No.
We don't own humans. It is your job to look after them to their best interest. But I do believe that the community, the state, the society, your family, whatever, have the right to intervene if it is agreed that what you're doing is not in the interest of the child. You're abusing, you're starving, you're bullying, whatever.
Yes, yes.
But that's where, as a society, we have to be mature enough to discuss as a society, not because one neighbor decided they didn't like you and you shouldn't have children.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, this is what happens. You get these loud voices and families get destroyed because of a loud voice.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, do we trust? A lot of people say we don't trust the state. You know, we don't trust the welfare workers. Well, then you have other issues. If you don't trust the state, then we have bigger fish to fry than family dynamics, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, and I understand that too. Mm. I mean, sure. I mean, at least being involved with what I'm involved with and, meeting with a lot of these sort of asylum mm. department, the Ministry of Internal Affairs, the Ministry of Health and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not talking the ministers themselves necessarily, but just sort of working through these government agencies and whatnot. It hasn't been easy. It hasn't, of course. This is what I always remind the board as well, that, you know, it's the relationships you build through the years that you need to keep.
Yeah.
And sort of, because you always find people within the ministries that you can work with and they can sort of help push things through and whatnot. Otherwise, I mean, it's the system. I'm very disappointed is an understatement.
You're clearly alone in your sentiments. I mean,
but as I said, it's working with there's a lot of great people in many of these departments and also in many of the parties. So that's why I don't belong to any party specifically.
All right, so we're striking you off the alarm record.
Yes.
Okay. Look, Nicola, I want to thank you so much for coming and spending this hour with me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I always enjoy talking with you. I do want to say thank you to you for the work and the activism and the blood, sweat and tears that you put into our society. People like you and many people like you don't get enough recognition, in my view. And I think whilst the issues that you fight for don't affect me personally, but they affect my society and they affect my world. So this is important. And you need to know that whilst there might be some very loud voices pushing back, remember that you are the voice piece for a lot of people that can't speak or are scared to or don't know how to. And you need to keep that up. And whether you're right or wrong about a lot of things, the fact that the discussions are happening need to happen.
Most important, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, and again, it's not just in the LGBT community. It's across civil society.
No.
There's a lot of people that are doing amazing work,
mm-hmm.
and they should all, yourself included, be commended for that and recognized for that. And I don't know, and I apologize if you have been officially, but it does need to. Anyone listening that is doing any award ceremonies anytime soon, you need to speak to Nicola. It's your love for the world around you. Like, I know that about you. You are a businessman. You are a civil society activist. You're engaged. I've seen you speaking at the top and right down at the bottom. And that impresses me. It takes a lot to impress me. So please know that. Believe me, it means a lot that I have a friend like you in Cyprus, and Cyprus has a friend in you. So
thank you. We're here. Thank you. Thank you again for having me. And to be honest, I'm thankful, very thankful to have a great team. both at work and for Accept. And not only the board that is now, but through the years, a lot of people have sacrificed time, and we don't get paid for it, for all the work that's been done. A lot of people have sacrificed a lot for different reasons and for different things. But we've managed a lot, and I'm really glad to see that, that things have changed. And I'm also glad to see that there's a lot more of a younger generation being out there, being who they are, not being afraid to be who they are. Yep. And that gives me hope for the future. And that's, yeah, again, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Nicola. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus. Island Talks. Open. Diverse. Free.